It's episode 550 of the Roadman Cycling Podcast, and Sarah's back with newbie questions. Let's cue that intro.
The big question is this: how do we use cycling as a tool to improve our health, our happiness, and our longevity? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Anthony Walsh, and welcome to the Roadman Podcast.
Sarah, it's Friday. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
How was your travels to Spain?
Oh, it was amazing. It was scorchio over there. Like, I mean, the sun was just beating down. It was heaven. Got a few new freckles.
And it was your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. We're not going to talk about what age. No, we're just brushing that one under the carpet. And I got a birthday present. What did I get? I never in my wildest dreams before I met you 10 years ago would have thought that this would have been the best birthday present ever. But
you've been brainwashed.
I've been brainwashed. Absolutely. And lads, I'm joining the cool team.
Gravel bikes are where it's at now, and Sarah is sporting 100% of her skin at the moment, but yeah, after she takes up gravel adventure, and that might not be the case.
You don't mind girls with no teeth, do you?
It's kind of a trailer park look that went with our camper van last week.
Oh, that was great, great fun, wasn't it? Camper van is the way to go if you're traveling around a country. You get to see so much of the place. It's so chilled out. You know, anything more than two people, probably not a good idea if you've kids and stuff. But
we've been debating this as well, that the camper van, everyone wants to get a van because it's really cool to have a van and it's like van life. But like, if you started thinking about how many times a year you actually use the van, like maybe it's 4, maybe it's 5, but it's definitely not like 40. Mm. So like, how much do we pay in Spain for the week? Like €600 for the week for a van?
Yeah, for nothing. It was so, so cheap. Now, the only thing is, we don't own this van and I took the side off it. So we didn't own the van and I took the side off it. So that's maybe the kind of biggest problem that you have. You have to kind of pay fees and deposits and all that kind of jazz. But yeah, renting, I think, is the way forward for the time being.
And over in Spain, we had a chance, but we didn't go to La Vuelta a España to watch the new king of cycling, the prince, being crowned as king. There's a little monarch reference for the week that's in it.
Remco Evenepoel. He's deadly, isn't he? It'll be interesting to see him and Roglic come out a couple of days ago to say he can't wait for, you know, to get stuck in and start competing against this guy. So I think we have some really spicy races ahead of us with when those two go neck and neck. There was a bit of controversy with Primoz Roglic coming out last week as well, saying that he completely blames Fred Wright for, you know, the big kind of crash and accident that happened in the sprint on the way home, which knocked Roglic out of the game and kind of handed the win, the red jersey, to Remco, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't think Remco would have held on. And I had an early podcast that I thought Remco would crack, and Remco did crack. And Roglic took, I think, 40 seconds out of him one day, took another 10 out the next day. And the day he crashed, like, don't get me started on that 3K rule because that's a disaster. But the Fred Wright Roglic crash, I think, assured that Remco won the overall, because I'm not sure that he had enough juice left in the legs to hold off Roglic, who just looked like he was getting stronger and stronger each day.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree that Roglic should have come out and kind of, you know, publicly shamed Fred Wright, or is this something that is just, it happens in racing? He said he dangerously passed him over and, you know, his handlebars got caught in Roglic's handlebars, and then essentially the crash happened and it was a Grand Tour ending mistake.
I often wonder about these sort of statements though, because like, it's not really a statement. It's Roglic asked about the crash and he like recounts what happened in the crash, but then everyone spins it as Roglic lays blame square on Fred Wright, when mm-hmm. the reality is someone probably said to Roglic, you know, what happened in the crash? And he's like, oh, Fred Wright brought me down. And it gets spun into this big, you know, circus around it. Like, it's difficult to see from the camera angles we have how Fred Wright is to blame. I'm hoping to get Fred Wright on the podcast in the next couple of weeks. So it'll be interesting to hear his take on the whole Roglic. We call it a debacle.
Yeah.
Debacle.
As often as we can, let's use that word. Okay, so the relegation saga continues this week. And I don't know if any of you beautiful cyclists have had a chance to listen to my podcast about trying to explain.
Sarah's obsessed with the relegation battle.
But like even compiling that podcast, I was tied up in knots trying to even word it in a way that would be, you know, people would understand what was going on, because it's very cloak and daggers by the UCI as to what's going on. We saw Tour of Quebec last week where even though, let's say, Bling Matthews didn't win, he still took 400 points home for his team, which is really, really needed for a bike exchange, okay? But it has changed the whole look and viewpoint and, you know, why the guys are racing, what their motivation is at this moment, you know, particularly for this fight at relegation. And now it is rumoured, we're not 100% sure, but maybe the UCI are actually going to scrap this relegation system. A lot of the teams on the bottom, the kind of four or five teams on the bottom, have come together and went to the UCI last week to say to them that it's completely unfair. And, you know, the way that the points have been, if you listen to my podcast, you go to some obscure race in the back end of nowhere, you get more points than if you win a stage race in the Tour de France. And it's all very confusing because the UCI don't have a very transparent list every week as to where the standings are. So the teams went to the UCI and the UCI are kind of saying now that they're going to review it. And I think, reading between the lines, the teams at the bottom went to the UCI and they're like, we are going to sue you out your behinds if you don't sort this
out.
But
I don't get it. It's just not like an English Premier League soccer team saying, oh, we don't agree with relegation when they're in the relegation zone. Like, everyone's known about this relegation system all year. So,
well, for 3 years, because it's a 3-year cycle.
Is it not a bit disingenuous now to go, like, you know, when they're in the relegation spot two weeks, 3 weeks before the season ends, like, oh, we don't agree with it all of a sudden?
But if you go to, if you look at the standings for the Premiership, it's all very transparent. It's very easy. The UCI have created this system that nobody can wrap their heads around. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't like the idea. So I've got a quote here from Jonathan Vauters, who I absolutely love to quote because he's so outspoken, but he is the director sportif for EF Education First, Easy Post. And he said, in cycling, it's not promotion slash relegation, it's promotion slash death. So he just means if you go down, that is the end of the team forever. So no one wants to see that.
Yeah, because they're obviously going to lose a lot of their key sponsors because they probably have sponsorship breaks and stuff in it. But look, we do have teams that are, you know, the Koenig Alpecin was in the first division last year. Now they're up and you're seeing Jay Vine, massive success. Matthew van der Poel, obviously the best rider in the world. So,
and De Koninck apparently thrived in the division underneath because they weren't crippled by all the fees that you have to pay the UCI for being in the World Tour, you know, the anti-doping fees and all of that kind of stuff. And they were invited to all of the big races anyway.
But that's because they had van der Poel.
Right, okay. Yeah,
yeah, like if you were down there and you didn't have a van der Poel, maybe you don't, because the Tour de France can't not have Mathieu van der Poel at race. He's one of those franchise players that's almost bigger than the sport.
Yeah.
So if you're like a Tour of Flanders, a Paris-Roubaix, and you're trying to give a return on investment to your sponsors, you want the biggest stars in the world there. And that's, you know, van der Poel, it's Remco, it's Wout van Aert. There's only three or four of these sort of marquee riders.
And it's now Carapaz. And I know that we're not big fans of Carapaz here, but he's going to EF next year. And now I think EF are safe enough at the moment if this relegation does happen. But if they did get relegated, I'm sure Carapaz covered his arse and had some kind of exit clause to not go there if they were relegated down, you know?
Possibly.
Yeah, I would say so. Anyway, that's just my opinion on the whole thing. I think it's a farce. Okay, Anthony, I ride with a friend. This is very applicable for you and me when we go out riding, except, I'll continue. I ride with a friend who is a lot lighter than me and I can't keep up with him on the climbs at all, but I'm much stronger on the flat. Any tips for structuring a ride together so we can actually be in each other's company, i.e. he's not sitting on my wheel on the flats and I'm not 5 minutes behind him on the climbs? Okay, after I read that question, it's nothing like us. You beat me on the climbs and on the flats. But I'm just talking about being in each other's company, some kind of a leveler.
Yeah, I don't think there is. Okay. It's two totally different fitness levels. Maybe e-bike is the answer, which sounds kind of crazy, but it's actually less and less crazy. Because e-bike is, I'm so bullish on e-bikes at the moment because they're like a handicap in golf. You know, a scratch golfer and a newbie golfer shouldn't be able to play together and have a fair game, but they can because you have this handicap system where you get shots on each hole. Well, like an e-bike gives you 100 watts, 200 watts, 300 watts extra. So whatever it is, it means that somebody who's totally new can climb with somebody who's world tour and on the flats as well. I think it's a brilliant, brilliant leveler.
So in that case, both of these lads need e-bikes because one of them will kick theirs in up the climb. The other one will kick there is in on the flats. Which one of them should get?
Like, I think the dude who's writing in is maybe being a bit kind to himself. If your man is dropping him on the climbs, he's most likely stronger than him on the flats as well.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so e-bikes, yeah, we're big fans here. You did want me to get a gravel e-bike, but I said no.
No, you prefer to go cycling on your own.
Okay, question two. What does Anthony recommend as a big gravel target for 2023? I'd like to target an epic event, maybe a multi-day event.
There's so many cool gravel races popping up. It seems to be like where the future direction of the sport is going. Like Rift that I rode in Iceland, they just opened their entry this week, and I would jump on that one fast if you're considering it. It will sell out fast, and it was absolutely brilliant. I can't think of anything more epic, but go back and listen to the podcast on that, because we have a number of caveats around, you know, Iceland's been a little bit bleak in parts and it's been very expensive. Mm-hmm. So you could maybe get, you know, a really, really epic, like a Kenyan migration gravel race, a multi-day event like that, which seems totally exotic and once in a lifetime. But honestly, I'd say if you costed them, it's probably cheaper.
Like, what would you go for your very first gravel ride, Anthony? You think start small with a one-day event?
There's not many. I don't think there's many multi-day events. I think most of them are one day, and depending on where you live. You know, if this question is coming in from the US, obviously they've massive events over there. Like they've, you know, Belgian Waffle Ride, Unbound, and all these amazing one day. The scene is just getting built in Europe. The Traca in Girona is meant to be a cool one that I want to do next year.
There's one in Chamonix in France, I know.
Yeah, there's
in around this time of the year.
We may compile a little list. I'm going to sit down maybe in the off season and kind of put together my calendar for next year. I definitely want to go back to Badlands. I'm a little bit undecided on Rift, as I say, because of the caveats we mentioned. But yeah, I think start with a one-day event. Something like Rift is a really, really fun start.
Okay, Anthony, what tools will Anthony be bringing on his trip to Biarritz and Girona? I'm planning a 3-day cycle around Tenerife in a few weeks' time. And while I want to be prepared, I want to stay as light as possible.
Yeah, it's quite difficult because now we're on disc brakes and we're on DI2. And as happened to me in Badlands, if your DI2 breaks, there's very, very little you can do. If your mechanical stuff breaks, it's, you know, a little game of hunting. You can normally hunt down the problem and say, okay, it's a cable, it's something mechanical that can be fixed. But when the DI2 goes, it needs to be plugged into the computer. It needs to run diagnostic checks. So you can't do anything really with your gears. And then brakes, again, like the hydraulic system needs, you know, tools that aren't really capable of being carried. So what I think you want to be able to fix is flat tires. So you're looking at plugs, sealants, tubes, a tire patch, which is very handy to have, just like an old piece of tire, a tire boot, chain breaker with a power link, and some Allen keys for just tightening, you know, stems, headsets, stuff like that. I think beyond that,
there's not much you can do.
There's not much you can do. You're going to need to get to a bike shop with anything bigger than that.
So a good multi-tool.
Good multi-tool with a chain breaker on it.
And a chain breaker.
Yeah.
Again, I still have no idea what a chain breaker is. Someone's going to have to
The key is in the wording of it. It breaks chains.
But why? I don't understand. Why would you want to break your chain?
So, because if your chain has a broken link or something and you want to take out the link, you know, because the links have to fan through. This is real newbie question stuff. The links have to obviously fan through the space of the derailleur at the back. So if you twist a link or you break a link, you're not going to be able to get the chain to rotate through the chain rings. So you need to break the chain to take out the broken link or add a new link.
And then how do you add the new link? Do you need a tool for that?
Well, that's why I'm saying if you bring a power link as well, it just clips
on. Oh, a power
on.
Link. Okay, yeah. Perfect. Okay, so that's what you're bringing anyway.
Power link, chain breaker, and bit of stuff to change a flat tire, and you're good to go.
And the lip balm, don't forget that. Sunscreen. Anthony, you want to talk about an affordable power meter for all year-round use for TechWarner.
Well, it's a question that everybody starts asking this time of year because, you know, we're starting to get more and more clients coming in. And actually, if anyone is interested in coaching, we may or may not close the doors on coaching by New Year because we're getting to a point where it's getting busier and busier. So make sure you hit Sarah a message on sarah@roadmancycling.com if you do want to get hooked up.
Yep.
But the power meter is the question that everyone wants to know this time of year because it's like the tool that enables that huge progress through the winter. And the one I always recommend to people, it's Stages, and it's a company that I'm actually talking to and I'm hoping we can get a discount or maybe they'll have some involvement in the podcast in the coming months because it's just such a cool, affordable power meter. When I started out with power, you probably heard the story of me pretending I needed a loan for a car to go into college. And it was like a 2,500-3,000 euro falsified loan application to get an SRM. That's how expensive they were back in the day. But stages now, you're looking at 500-600 euro for a non-drive side crank.
You were getting an SRM and I was buying my first little Polo with no power steering. That's basically where we were at.
Yeah, same prices. Like, it's insane. But now stages have really, really changed the game with that sort of 600-700 euro. And it's so durable. Like, I've ridden that through rivers. I've ridden that through, you know, all sorts of terrain, like the tandem. I've been using it on the track, and you know, it's just something that you have for years and years for that price.
Yeah, I need to use it on the tandem, but I don't really understand this person's question about for all year round use. So, is it a thing where people change their power meter from summer to winter?
You'd probably have two bikes. You'd probably have like a crank on your winter bike and a crank on your road bike. But if, let's say if you have an Ultegra crank. You know, for a long time, I just take my non-drive side crank off my winter bike and then add it onto my race bike and away you go. So you're good to go.
Okay, happy days. Okay, I think that's it, Anthony.
That's it, Sarah. Thank you for another edition of Newbie Questions.
Thanks for having me, and I will chat to everybody again tomorrow.
Sarah's solo cast tomorrow. Right, say, folks, chat to you then.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Have you ever wondered how good you could actually be? Each of us has a unique set of circumstances with work, family, and social obligations, but we also want to fulfill our potential in cycling. Okay, maybe you won't ever win the Tour de France, but for most of us, this is what cycling is about. So let us build you the perfect training plan around your lifestyle that's totally unique to you and will help you finally realize your cycling dreams. So whether you're just getting started on the bike or if you're a more seasoned cyclist, we have a suitable coach for you. So why not schedule a call with us and we can have a chat about how we can help you go further than you ever dreamed of in your cycling and fitness goals. Go to roadmancycling.com/contact or pop me an email directly to sarah@roadmancycling.com.